Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening and welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host tonight, Red Beckman, and Dwayne Moore, and Dr. Kate. And we'll be logging in over at the Crusade Radio site in just a few minutes to join with Doug Millar, who is hosting a simulcast with us tonight with John DeCamp and David Scherter, and possibly some others along with Doug. And Dwayne, are you there? Say hello.
I'm here. Good to have you guys around.
Dwayne, I'm going to ask you after I check in with Red here if you will open us in prayer. Red, you want to say hello? Red's not here yet, so Dwayne, go ahead and open us up.
All righty. Well, I'm sure Red will be along momentarily. I know he was working hard doing his garden yesterday, so he's probably finishing it up. But Father, thank you. And then shall that wicked be revealed. I've been hearing that in my heart all day, Father. Thank you so much. In this day and age, Father, that you are revealing knowledge. Knowledge shall be increased. We are finding out the truth of these evil Luciferian people. Their hidden backgrounds, their dark, dark ways. Father, you are amazing. You are showing us the truth of what's really going on. You're revealing things. And Father, you're asking us to choose sides. Father, those of us that understand your love and your wonderful, perfect law of liberty are now standing in your side, knowing that we don't want to be in between the two trenches when this begins, because, Father, we understand we don't want to be lukewarm. Those of us that see this evil side of the world that some of us have never seen, Father, we ask you to help us tonight, that everyone on this call would have the strength, courage, and conviction to stand perfectly with the words that you would have us say. We may bring this out into the light. Have no fellowship with the evil works of darkness, but rather expose them. We ask you, Father, that you would touch our hearts and keep us fresh and right on track with your will. In the name of your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach. Hallelujah. Are we there?
Yes. Before we log over to Crusade Radio, Dwayne, do you have an update on William Miller up in New Hampshire?
Actually, I do. And I just got off with Marie, and I spoke to Gus earlier. In fact, I had to cut Marie short so I could come here. But it's quite interesting what took place over there today. William Miller went in today with four documents that Gus helped him prepare, some really interesting documents I don't have time to get into, but basically he went into the court and said, before we begin, I'd like to make sure that you have a oath of office, and the judge said, yes, he does, and he went through, short here for brevity, but the judge basically acknowledged, yes, he has an oath of office, and then he wanted to get William to start some proceedings. He said, some documents I want to have you sign into the court record, and the judge agreed to that. All the documents were then signed into the court record, and the judge said, okay, we'll begin the proceedings, and William said, well, I want to make sure we establish jurisdiction first. The judge said, no, I have jurisdiction over this court. William said, no, I don't, and and that's what these documents are about. And if you're not recognizing my status, there's nothing more for me here, and I'll see you later. He kind of walked out of the courtroom on him. I'm paraphrasing because I don't know the exact wording. But he walked out, and the judge's jaw kind of dropped, and that was the end of it. So I think that was a good move, actually. But the folks up there are pretty impressed with how that happened. But it puts the ball in the other court today, so it's kind of interesting. But that's the gist of what I got, and I put that in a nutshell for you. And I did see the documents, all the documents. Gus was very wise. He put the Dun & Bradstreet on each document announcing the court, of each, the address of each court, so to make sure that they understood that we know about the corporation that they're under. So quite interesting day today. Yeah.
Well, Red, I hear you have a live mic, so you want to say hello before we dial up the Crusade Radio Group?
Yeah, I'm on, and I'm kind of anxious to see what this is all about tonight. I'm very curious about all of this, and we want to welcome everybody that's coming on as guests tonight. I'm here, and I'm present and accounted for, but I will try to keep my mouth shut.
Well, I'm sure you'll want to contribute later on. I'm going to dial them up now, so everybody's going to hear this call, so it'll take me a second to get them on with us.
Welcome. This service is provided by FreeConferenceCall.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound sign. You entered 1, 4, 2, 3, 8, 5. If this is correct, press 1. Re-enter your... There are 3 participants in this conference. Please announce yourself.
On a major cover-up. Well, that's all. We have another guest on. Hello. Will you please introduce yourself?
Doug Millar. This is Terry Dodd and Walls in Our Minds, Blog Talk Radio at Revolution Radio with Dr. Tate and Red Beckman and Dwayne Moore and myself are all on and ready to, for you to proceed.
Fantastic. Okay. We just started talking about Columbine and Sam on the campus talking about how the records were sealed and everything. Don, do you want to continue on that line of thinking?
Well, as I explained, right at the very height of the matter, or like I said in my book, I'll repeat it, I said in my book, the Franklin cover-up involved another scandal and the same type of activity, though, in some ways. Anyway, I said that the first crime of Columbine was, of course, the killing of the children. But in my opinion, the second offense was probably sealing those records and keeping the truth away from the public all this time. And then they ordered them sealed another 20 years here, a few years back. And so they're still sealed for another 16 years. Some of the critical records and depositions and other information gathered, basement tapes and the depositions I took of some of the parents of the killers and so on and so forth. I guess I think that, like I say, the first crime was the killings by those two that did the killings, and the second crime is concealing, in my opinion, the real causes maybe and some things like that.
And what do you think that you feel like the third major crime of Columbine has been?
What?
What do you feel is the third major crime regarding Columbine?
Well, I've just given the two of them.
You don't want to get into a third one? Okay, well, John, now, you've discussed on my show before the fact that they thought the U.S. Marshals and the three of them were snapped up by Judge Babcock, a federal judge, Thomas Gallagher records, including those depositions you took of Eric Curtis's parents. Now, you took those depositions separately, I would assume, correct?
Took them what?
You took their depositions separately?
As I recall, I don't recall everything in exact detail right now, but yeah, I took the depositions. Anyway.
Okay. So the question is, you mentioned that on my show before that you obviously it would be very interesting if some of the things that they thought they got a copy of might still appear someplace. Would you be willing to discuss that again on the show?
Well, I believe there may be some things that they think they have concealed forever that may not actually be concealed, but then who knows in life what happens in these things.
Well, Ted Gerson, former head of the FBI from Los Angeles, is obviously a dear friend of yours. He lost him last year, but he said that you're a master strategist. He's never seen anybody like you in court before. And he just used to chuckle and talk about some of your war courts. And so I always knew that there's no way you would only have one copy of anything in your files after all the problems you've had for the last 24 years since you started investigating and trying to cover up. So I've always known that you had these, and I never want to put you on the spot and ask you about them before, but since you're now talking about this, are you planning on...
I think someday when the public really finally finds all the truth, the second crime of Columbine has been then, as I repeat again, maybe the concealing of a lot of information and failing to deal with it and failing to...
So, John, why do you feel that the sheriff would allow the FBI to come in and control the entire investigation when they had no jurisdiction in the county unless the sheriff, if you think a new sheriff would want to control his own investigation at Columbine because his future was on the line? He either did the right thing for a Columbine investigation, which he never did, or he would never win another election. He'd be embarrassed or even run again. And that, of course, happened. So why do you think that the sheriff, the district attorney, the state attorney general, the U.S. attorney here in Colorado, the other, like the governor, everybody, all the way up to the FBI, and, of course, the White House decided to conceal what really happened at Columbine?
Well, I guess I'm not going to speculate too much other than to suggest that so frequently we find that the system kind of protects itself sometimes when people high enough up are in danger and each other protects themselves, and I suspect that's exactly what came into play in Columbine, just like so frequently happens on some other things. In fact, systems historically throughout thousands of years of history show that they rise to be empires, and then the very ones that become the greatest and strongest and most powerful maybe self-destruct from within because they abused the system to protect itself starts doing some improper things, and I've seen that in several examples in these cases I've handled, some of them, and I think it's a serious thing in the entire system of the system protecting itself, law enforcement, for example, covering up for some judge or some law official or sheriff or something because whatever, anyway, to protect the system.
John?
The thing to me... Go ahead, please.
John, I'm... you know, you mentioned the first crime at Columbine, and I think... I don't mean to correct what you said there. That's not my point, but I think it's important for people
this
to recognize.
Terry Dodd.
John, I
think so. If you want to talk.
I'm sorry, I'll do that. I introduced myself at the beginning, so I thought that was a done deal. John,
now, listeners don't know your recognize your voice.
Columbine really was just a series of crimes that have been going on for a long time, and everybody thinks of that as an isolated incident, but in fact, it's just something that happened in the midst of all the crime that was occurring. Can you maybe describe it in that context for us?
Then maybe you can do that better than I.
Well,
it's John, you're still muzzled, right?
Okay.
Remember some depositions and things I gathered, some of that evidence, certain records that I filed in the court were sealed. And then they got sealed again. So technically, in fact, they sent law enforcement from Colorado to my offices in Lincoln, Nebraska. I wasn't even there. I came in later. Well, they were, anyway, and they were going through records and seizing certain records. And those are still sealed today and were resealed here 3 years ago after the original Columbine. So, as I say, the system kind of protects itself. And you're right, Columbine didn't just be the first thing ever bad like that. Out of nowhere, it might have had some seeds planted earlier in a lot of places these days.
Well, for example, we know that those boys that did the shooting, Eric and Dylan, those boys had been arrested some 15 months earlier because of a burglary that they committed, and they were subjected to from what I've heard from other sources, they were perhaps subjected to some abuse at the hands of the police that were holding them, and that was some of what
I believe you will find someday. You're exactly right on that.
And I believe that go ahead.
The very type of abuse that should have been prevented.
Well, let's be more specific. Ron Eckner,
another type of abuse.
Exactly. Ron Eckner took a sketch of the leader of the two killers, future killers, 15 months beforehand, and he had someone erase the scratches and scribbling over it to find out what was under it. And he, of course, came to me about, well, during the Columbine, the governor's Columbine Review Commission hearing, and look at this, Doug, and he showed it to me. He said, look at this. It's very obvious that this is Deputy Sheriff, Tim Walsh, standing with his star on his chest and stick figure, standing over a four-legged stick figure sheep, and of course, a depiction of Eric Harris being sodomized by Tim Walsh. And so the El Paso county sheriff, his investigators and detectives, and looking at all the evidence that was being covered up, they were asked to review it because the parents were so angry that they had the records sealed and everything, the depositions sealed. And the sheriff's department, one of the detectives, labeled the file Walsh Butt Rape. And Don Taylor is here with me. Don, do you want to address that issue as what you feel happened there? And you've discussed with Ron Eckner, and he's got a great website for you and everything. Please discuss that, okay?
We have it on the website. It's walshbuttrape.txt. Now, we felt that's the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. We also have the drawing that Eric said, and then also Eric said They took everything we had and went through the process, and they were so angry at the sheriff. They weren't angry at the jocks. They were angry at the sheriffs. If you look at the writing, they were complaining about the sheriffs and how angry they were. And they were going to get revenge for the January incident. So you can text in January incident and find out a whole lot from there. We also have a tape on ColumbineFamilyRequest.org of Eric in the lunchroom with his friends. And one was making fun of him that he had been butt raped. And Eric got very embarrassed. I mean, seeing his facial expressions, how upset, and he banged the table, you know, hard,
yeah.
And looked down. He's so angry. And that we have that tape showing that. And we're talking about, we really believe that that happened. But I don't know if you guys are also aware of a assistant coach that was at that school before then, who was arrested for molesting a bunch of boys. And I met a father of a son who's hung. He believes the policeman that was arrested for that deal, he believes his son was murdered by the police officer, the deputy sheriff. See, and that I think he was from Arapahoe County, another Arapahoe County sheriff. So that was closed and no investigation. You know, so I mean, they're getting by with all kinds of evil, and then Sullivan's the biggest, I mean, jerk that I've ever seen, because we took our information to him and he wouldn't do anything. Jeff Sullivan. Sheriff Sullivan. Arapahoe County again. So we're talking about Arapahoe County Sheriff again, who just got arrested for molestation and selling drugs. Okay, same thing.
Of children,
see?
I repeat.
So that all goes together.
John DeCamp again, I repeat, the system sometimes has key people in key positions that protect the system for their own safety. And in doing so, they...
Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
To do that, they have to maybe let some very guilty ones go free and the truth never come out about the things and so on and so forth.
Well, John, having spent the last 23 and a half years of your life investigating the octopus you call the friend cover-up, I've only been working with you for 20 years this August, but the bottom line is that I've been shocked to find that so many people who prefer sodomy, men who prefer sodomy, they get married, they have children, and they abuse their own children. And they do this so they can get ahead in the political and business world, as well as educators. But it's a network of pedophiles and sodomites that seem to have control of our government now. Would you agree?
Well, they certainly have an influence. Remember, it's a fact of life that some people in pretty prominent positions, politicians and some even prominent businessmen and others, sometimes get themselves compromised because of their conduct, and then they have to maybe sacrifice some others to protect themselves, via quote, protecting the system.
Hey, David. Thank you, David, for coming out.
Oh, well, sorry. I just wanted to point out that pedophile groups have been going on for quite some time. Take, for example, Dream Board. Dream Board was just busted, and I believe they busted 70 members on Dream Board, but they found out that the existence of Dream Board has been going on since before the computer. And the computer has really made everything much more accessible. But it's the system, I firmly believe that it's the system that's screwed up. Because the system that you're explaining about in Columbine is the same system that I'm talking about in Omaha, Nebraska, which is the same system that I have survivors talking about in Michigan right now. And so, and they're all linked. you know, the Atlanta child murders, they're all linked. All of these are linked, you know. And,
absolutely correct.
And so, you know, that's, and I know that my parents were involved in a child abduction ring. I know that. I know the people who were involved with the abductions and, you know, where that was going on, and I've had videos, and now I've written a book trying to explain exactly where I'm coming from with all of this and what I know to be true. And so all of this stuff is linked. And Benjamin, hold on for just a moment. Benjamin Skinner, I believe, he wrote a book called A Crime So Monstrous, Face-to-Face with Modern-Day Slavery, E. Benjamin Skinner. The book is phenomenal. It does not talk about the slavery process in the United States. However, it does talk about the mindset of ritual abuse and why it's so easy to keep people in their place when you get them in a situation like that. And so that works for both victims and for pedophiles. And unfortunately, pedophilia, in my experience, is being promoted everywhere. We have completely, the time before the Gutenberg Press, we were having sex with children. We were looking at children like they were adults, just like we do on television, because children are adults. They have witty comments and all of that. It's unrealistic. And we also had violence and people who were extremists. We got the Gutenberg Press. Gutenberg Press started to educate the people. We focused on the children and the knowledge of the children, and we started to break knowledge into sections. And so we made an educational system to where we started to teach our children and sex. The church is heavily involved with that. That was the problem, because the church has been involved with all of this satanic stuff from the very beginning. So is the Jewish community. You know, it's not, I am not an anti-Semite. My family's heritage is Jewish, but I will tell you that in Omaha, Nebraska, the Jewish community was heavily involved with the satanic stuff that I was involved with as a kid. And so there were a lot of people that were involved in, you know, temple that were also involved with other stuff. Not saying that there weren't priests involved. I'm not being an anti-Semite when I say that that was going on. And I believe that it's the Jewish heritage. And it would be interesting to find out what heritage has been for these kids, because they were not just arbitrarily selected. That is not how it works. So, I'm sorry, I'm rambling. So I'll go ahead.
No,
sorry.
The important thing is, this was David Schroeder talking, right?
Yeah, that was me, John, David. That was David Schroeder talking.
Right, okay. And David, I got a question. When did I first locate you and interview you and talk to you and get into all this involving you?
I think that we got involved that 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay.
It had to have been 6 or 7 years ago when we met with, because
Noreen
it took me a while to write about it, with Noreen Gosh. And her husband.
People may remember Johnny Goss was the son, and my investigation actually, believe it or not, shocking as it sounds, located Johnny, and I won $1 million judgment against some of the people in the Franklin case, even though I've never been able to collect it because they got sent to prison. And anyway. But David, I was trying to remember just when it was, but it was about, what, 6 or 7 years ago when I located
you? About 6 or 7 years ago, yep.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. You know, I think that we're all doing good work. It's, my goal as a survivor in all of this in Omaha, Nebraska, is actually to bring survivors forth. I need to encourage them.
I've got a little bit of caucus. because I'm a lawyer, as you know, and the court has sealed those records, so I can give comments, beliefs, and attitudes, so on and so forth. And, of course, I made it clear that I believe the first crime of Columbine was the killing of the kids by Harris and Klebold, but the second crime was making sure the truth never came out thus far.
David, I want to ask you, you mentioned the dream boat. Is that B-O-H-T? Dream board. Dream as in, dream as in D-R-E-A-M, and then board, B-O-A-R-D, all one word, dream board.
Thank you. Do they have a website?
Not anymore. They were all busted. There was a lot of stuff. I talk about dream board in my book as far as pedophile groups being connected way before the computer.
Which book is that, David? This is Terry Dodd.
Terry, it's a rabbit hole, a satanic ritual abuse survivor story. You can find the information on rabbitholebook.com, and that'll just give you a whole laid rundown of the book and what's in it.
I asked that question for our listeners, actually, David.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good, Terry. Okay, so...
David, I'd kind of like for you to continue.
I want to know, is there anybody else that wants to say anything more about Columbine before we get into why we're going to be here next week for many issues? Okay. With no one more wanting to discuss Columbine right now, we've obviously covered that for the last 13 years, but a lot of new things are coming out, from what I understand, in the next week, 10 days here in Colorado regarding that, with our events and everything. I just sent all of you a tentative schedule for starting next Monday night. We've got David Schurter coming in from Omaha to speak. And we're going to, of course, April 30th, as most of you know, is the founding date of Anton LaVey created the Church of Satan. That evening, I rolled into May Day, which is May 1st. And, of course, David, it's a PR case to let people know that we just have a lot of fun and we have a lot of sex. And but then when you put out a satanic book called the Satanic Bible, and 2 years later, that really spelled it out, because he said we've been violating all 10 commandments. So does anybody want to discuss the Church of Satan before we move forward for the evening? Okay.
Well, you guys do know that Michael Aquino was part of the Church of Satan at the beginning.
Of course.
And broke away in 1975. Okay.
Exactly.
Now, this is the same person who wrote a book or co-wrote a book with Valerie, is that correct?
Aquino?
I don't recognize that name, but somebody else must.
Valerie is a general, a retired general, that was a Fox News contributor for a while.
Oh, okay. You're referring to Anton LaVey's number one high priest under him, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino.
Yes. They co-wrote a book together.
Okay.
Oh, well, you give me the title of that book.
It was a report.
I don't have it offhand. I'd have to do a little research.
Not a problem.
Okay.
Not a problem.
I can give it to you. It's titled from PSYOPs to Mind Wars, the Psychology of Victory, as I recall. And you can go on their Aquino's website, and I've sent it all an email, but I think it's about time we expose it and urge people to read it. And the title of the website, I should say, is X-E-P-E-R, X is an X-ray, E is an easy, P is in Peter, E is in easy, R is in Roger, .org. And you then, but sometimes it's easier to find that report because you've got a big website. If you just Google from PSYOPs to Mind War, and then you click on that, and it takes you right to the report. It's a military report with two military officers wrote discussing how they used satanic ritual abuse and everything from Mind PSYOPs, psychological operations, and how the Mind War, they're still doing both, but the Mind War is where they use high-tech things to implant people, hit them with microwaves, and this was retired intelligence officers alumni put out a report. The chair of that report and was Julia McKinney, and it's called let's get the title of it. But what is so important, she said, do you think it's just a coincidence that all the technology reporting back to us from victims of the technology began after the only CIA director become president was installed? And of course, she's talking about George Herbert Walker Bush. So do our guests, or you want to discuss that technology at all?
Well, I know all about microwave technology and what it feels like to have it directed at you.
Yeah,
and, the first time that it happened was when I was first in my investigation. And what ends up happening is the air around you feels pressurized. You can't get comfortable. And the worst part about it is there's a device that it's a sound device. And it's like having a mosquito, only the pitches change frequently, constantly, and there's no rhythm to it whatsoever. So your mind never rests. And it kept me awake for 2.5 weeks, and I had no idea what was going on. At the time, I was talking with Ted Gunderson, and Ted was telling me that I was being inundated with a microwave sound machine, and I did not believe him. So I went into the hospital, decided to drop all of my investigations, took everything off the web. It scared me, and it scared all the people that were around us. At the same time that was happening, we were receiving dead animals in our yard. Our cars were vandalized, and the tires were cut, and the windows were smashed. And we were receiving death threats on the phone in the form of a heart monitor. It was coming from a patient's room, from the number that we ascertained because we called the number from our caller ID to find out if we were in some sort of computer loop, to find out that the number was coming from someone's patient room. So someone was playing a heart monitor for us 19 times on our answering machine. And so the second time, I ended up going into the hospital the second time, about 8 months after that. That was completely emotional. I'd given up this fight, and I felt like I had failed God, and I was miserable. I felt like I had failed everybody and felt pretty bleak. You know, it was very bleak. And so the third time was I sent out the manuscript to my marketing company of Rabbit Hole. And the very next day that I sent it out, that noise came back. And I knew exactly what it was, the same exact problems. The pressure around me, the sound with my ears. And I let it go for about a week and a half until I decided to readmit myself into the hospital. I didn't hear that. The funny thing about it is that everyone kept telling me it was tinnitus or that I was having, you know, a psychotic break or anything. But I only heard the noise in my house. If I left my house and went blocks away from my house, the noise went away, so did the feeling. Everything went away. So I don't know where it was coming from, or I have absolutely no idea, the specifics of this machine. I just know that the third time, right before I went into the hospital, I uploaded the whole manuscript of Rabbit Hole as it was, because it used to be called Confessions of an Antichrist. And so I went into Lasting Hope, which is where I had been before, and I didn't hear that noise until about 45 minutes before they came to get me in that room. And it was really super loud, and I had never experienced anything quite like it before. I came out of the room to go check out of my, to go get checked into my room, and they took my blood pressure, and my blood pressure was 190 over 145.
Wow.
And so I was rushed by rescue squad to Creighton University, where I was admitted for 3 days because they wanted to know why I was near a heart attack or stroke. And so I had test after test after test run to find out that my heart was and still is 100% healthy. I am a healthy individual. The difference was is that I had them document everything I was saying and had them send me everybody so that I could tell everybody that I was in an investigation that was dealing with a government cover-up, and that they had some little toy that they were aiming at me, and it was making me sick. And I had them refer them back to my website and to my book so that they could see that I was not crazy. And then after I got done for 3 days, they took tests. My blood work didn't even show that my blood pressure was up, even though my blood pressure was up for 4 hours in the emergency room. It was up like that. And so God was watching out over me that I didn't have a heart attack or stroke. And when I got out of Creighton University, I refused to go home and went to Lasting Hope, where I had them document everything because I wanted them to document my mental stability, because I wanted people to know I have documentation that I was totally okay. What I was saying sounded outlandish and it sounded crazy, but if you knew the whole story, it didn't sound so crazy. And I got a chance to actually change the minds of Lasting Hope and Creighton University. And when I got my book published, Rabbit Hole, I took a few copies down to Lasting Hope and gave them to the doctors and nurses so that when the patients come in saying the very same thing that I said, they stop discrediting them and stop giving them so much medication and start listening to what they said and giving them credence that there was a satanic cult in Omaha, Nebraska, and they were doing all kinds of terrible things.
Good for you.
Thank you. Did you ever talk to doctors after they read your book? I haven't talked to them. I ran into my head nurse one time out shopping, and they're not supposed to say hello, but because I said hello first, and she told me that I was a blessing from God. So I think the book went over well.
Well, David, speaking of your book, I just checked the mail because I've been gone for all afternoon, and you have to be come in, so thank you so much. I know it's one day service, pretty expensive to send to at the camp of me. John, did you get a copy of your book also?
John DeCamp?
Yes.
Did you check your mail this afternoon? I received my copy of David's book today.
Yes, I checked my mail. Yes, I have his book.
Great. Okay, good. Okay, so since we've been talking about this book a little bit, John, in front of you, you've been on the list, unless you probably had a chance to look at it yet, have you?
You're talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is John DeCamp. I have not read it yet. I looked at it, I scanned it, and I will start reading it thoroughly tomorrow. I just got it today.
Right. Well, John, the cover of the book says the foreword is by Randy Noblet, PhD clinical psychologist and author of Cult and Ritual Abuse. And, of course, you were down in Texas for Randy Noblet's and his Ritual Abuse conference back, as I recall, March of 1995. I tried to make it down there from Alaska. I got as far as Santa Rosa, but I couldn't raise enough money to get down there. And, of course, would you like to share any feelings you have regarding Randy Noblet, his wife, and or Mark Phillips, who was the person that co-hosted that event?
I'll hold off on that.
Well,
I'll log on a little later here. I got to run. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, you come back on the second hour, John?
Oh,
yeah, he's
gone.
Yeah, I tried talking into it yesterday and again today. He's got so much on his plate at all times. It was nice that he participated as long as he did. So would you, David, please share with us why you asked Randy Noblet to write the foreword, and where you two are going to be in about 3 weeks.
Well, first, I want to say that we're going to be at the Survivorship Conference in Oakland. You can find information about the you can find out about the Survivorship Conference at survivorship.org. And he's going to be the professional presenter, and I'm going to be the survivor presenter. And that is May 18th and 19th. So it's 18th and 19th. And then I asked Randy Noblet, I had a friend of mine who just suggested to contact Randy. I had read his book, Ritual Abuse in the 21st Century, which is an amazing book, and it spoke to me. Well, it was like reading my life story, and here it was that so many people had experienced the same thing that I had, and Randy had put such a fantastic book together with his wife, Pamela. And so I emailed Randy and asked him if he would read my book, and if he liked my book, if he would consider writing a foreword. And and he read my book. I sent my book to him, and he read it, and he liked it so much that he was excited to write the foreword. And now he's actually making it a suggested reading for his students, for his classes. And so I find that I think it's Alliant University in LA. They have one in San. They have a hub in San Francisco. They have a hub in Fresno, and they have a hub in LA. I'm not exactly sure. I'm sorry, the name of the school. I need to find that out. Well, wait a minute. I bet it's in the foreword. Alliant International University, Alhambra, California.
Alhambra, LA, right?
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Would you please
read this forward, I think that would be important for people to understand a man of national and international prominence, dealing with people like you for decades, so why he would endorse your book. I think it's important for them to hear that forward. Would you be willing to do that, please?
Oh, sure. And it's only a couple pages, so it's not really that long.
Sure.
Some of us are skeptics. We tend to disbelieve many things we see and hear. I was such a person about ritual abuse until I discovered otherwise in my psychological therapy practice. During the course of therapy, one of my patients told me narratives about having been abused in satanic rituals during her childhood. My wife and co-author, Pamela Perskin Noblet, and I wrote a book about this patient in our book, Cult and Ritual Abuse, Its History, Anthropology, and Recent Discovery in Contemporary America, published by Prager. With the passage of time, I heard similar ritual abuse narratives from well over 300 individuals. I am no longer a skeptic. The psychological community now recognizes the diagnoses we are seeing in abused patients. At the same time, new organizations and individuals have come forward to reinterpret the recent upsurge in child abuse allegations as being so-called false memories. Not all of these memories are false. Many of them are real, and they are substantiated with other facts. The weight of evidence indicates that child sexual abuse is underreported, not overstated. Nonetheless, this backlash continues to attract media coverage, sometimes adversely, affecting public policy and the outcomes of court hearings. Consequently, abuse survivors are often not believed and then further betrayed by society that failed to protect them in the first place. In this kind of environment, survivors of child abuse may be vulnerable to further abuse and exploitation because of the wide net of disbelief that has been cast. Therapists are cautious about accepting abuse survivors for treatment or in carefully considering child abuse as a possible explanation for their problems. This is sometimes true even though addressing abuse is essential to effectively treat these survivors. Unfortunately, therapists sometimes fear if their clients make claims that they were abused in childhood that the therapist may be blamed for these revelations. There have been numerous allegations alleging the therapist implanted such memories of abuse. Civil lawsuits and complaints to licensing boards have been initiated even when the therapist did nothing wrong. Mental health professionals are often aware that they expose themselves to peril when they responsibly address child abuse histories. The subject of ritual abuse further complicates the already complex and frequently misunderstood subject of child abuse. Some skeptical authors have claimed that there have never been any convictions for ritualistic crimes, or that the FBI has never found any evidence of ritual abuse, or that allegations of ritual abuse have only appeared in the U.S. These statements are incorrect, but nonetheless frequently repeated by those who have either not been investigated the subject carefully or have not reported the facts accurately. We have written about these misstatements in our book, Cults and Ritual Abuse. So what is ritual abuse? The short answer is abuse in a ritual, but it is really more than that. Ritual abuse consists of systematic, painful, terrifying, and humiliating acts that are typically initiated with young children, primarily before the age of 2. These abuses are so profoundly disturbing that the child experiences psychological states of shock that include a sense of disconnection from the traumatic events. As particular abusive rituals are methodically repeated, the child learns to undergo increasingly deeper states of dissociation of consciousness, or trance-like states. In other words, the trauma survivor is typically trained to become another person. This is how dissociation of identity is learned. Memories are pushed further away and deeper in the mind, only to emerge much later in life. Over time, many survivors of extreme abuse end up with an inner world that might include such things as buildings, caves, or forests, and groups of disconnected parts that may be perceived as inner people of all ages and both genders, including also spirits, angels, demons, gods, animals, robots, and mythological characters, many of whom have specific assigned jobs to protect or save the abused survivor. This kind of trauma-based learning is sometimes called programming. David Schroeder takes you down his own rabbit hole and shares his survivor story in the book. He does not elaborate on all the unspeakable details of his abused experiences Instead, he focuses on his own interpersonal experiences in the context of Omaha subcultures that have so far been suspected but unknown and hidden from view. He addresses the abuses of power that are often associated with the abuse of honorable people like David himself. I will not summarize his history for you. That you will have to read for yourself. James Randy Noblet, Ph.D., Alliant International University, Alhambra, California, December 2011.
David, that was really good. I saw on your website that you wanted to kind of shift the focus and tie in some of the bigger picture. And I believe that that forward lays a good groundwork for that. You have obviously witnessed on a microscopic kind of scale, if you will, something that's going on a macro scale. And I believe that that's kind of the message that the listeners need to hear and the people across the country need to recognize that this is not isolated. It's not just some nutcase over in the corner of society or in some specific community. It covers the breadth of our country. It covers the breadth of every institution that controls our society, the government, the judiciary, education, all of these places. And I believe that that's kind of the message that I'm hoping you'll spend a little bit of time educating our listeners about tonight.
Well, it's interesting that you would say the history, because everyone knows that George Washington himself was a Freemason. And if you look at it historically, the Freemasons have a secret and very strong philosophical look on life. And that really needs to be looked at, because it has been, our system can't but be inundated with it, because at the very beginning were Freemasons. I was just talking to a friend of mine who I explained in my book that my family is part of the Colonial Dames. The Colonial Dames is an offshoot, an inner circle of the Daughters of the American Revolution. Daughters of the American Revolution. And Colonial Dames is an inner posse group in that my family was first in power in the 13 colonies. We were the first of the Americas, and we were first in power in the colonies. We also happened to be a coven of witches when we were in England, which my dad was incredibly proud of. But the thing is that what I'm trying to do with my website now is interconnect, because my father was a child trafficker. He abducted children and trafficked them and killed them. You know, that's a lot of what he was doing. And if you look at the cases of Jacob Wetterling, the Oakland child killings in Michigan, the Ricky Chadwick case in Omaha, Nebraska, which is, they're all heavily connected with my family and heavily connected with areas that my family were in. And they all involve a blue truck, which was my father's utility truck, I believe. And they have child killings in Atlanta. They have child killings in Colorado. They have child killings in all up and down the West Coast. And in Hawaii, I just spoke to a survivor in Hawaii who's going to be at the survivorship conference on May 18th and 19th. And she was talking about how it's prevalent in Hawaii as well. And so this is not just one little case situated, you know, it's not just one little thing. It's all interconnected. Doug referred to it as an octopus. And I've heard it referred to as an octopus, but I think it's more apt to say that it's a spider web, because all of the pieces are disjointed, and it's easy to get stuck on one and not be able to see the rest. it's not so much an octopus as it is a spider web. And but it's all interconnected. And there is this, as harsh as it is to say, and as radical as it may sound, I am beginning to believe that there is a group of people who have always been in power, who have a great deal of wealth, who do believe in a new world order and want to control the world. Now, whether or not they succeed at that remains to be seen. I don't believe that they'll succeed personally. However, to say that there isn't some sort of, you know, what do the Rupert Murdochs of the world think? You know, and now he's coming out and saying, oh, yeah, we were wiretapping people. Sorry, my bad. And people are just okay with that. You know, it's just outrageous. Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox.
Well, that's okay, David. I think, so we've all got to get on a soapbox every now and then. I want to back up, you mentioned George Washington and the fact that he was a Mason. I've been studying that quite a bit of late. One of the good resources that I found is this book by Andrew Hitchcock called Synagogue of Satan. And he brings forth the Bauer family and how they became the Rothschilds and how they've, even by their own admission, by their own words, you can prove that they are, in fact, conspiring, that they are, in fact, Luciferians. You don't have to guess about it. You can actually look at their own writings and some of their own admissions and look at the history of it, and it becomes undeniable. But at the same time, the Illuminati, which is a real thing, some people try to make that some kind of fictional being, that group infiltrated the Freemasonry in a big way just about at the founding of our country. So there were a lot of people who were Masons, and you and I and everybody listening, I'm sure, has known a lot of Masons who were very good people because they weren't in the initiate, high-level, esoteric agenda. They were still involved in the exoteric agenda, which on the surface appears to be a good and charitable thing, when in fact the people that are behind it and above it in the pyramid are evil and worship and pray to Lucifer, and they are very much tied into the group of Khazarians, which today claim to be Jewish when in fact they're not. And so I want to point people to Scripture, especially Matthew 23:15, Revelations 2:9, and Revelations 3:9, and other scriptures, which I maybe even can let Red talk about. But the point is that it's even predicted in there that this group of people would make these claims to be Jewish, and they're not. So you were talking about a while ago about not being anti-Semitic. Well, the fact of the matter is, these people are not of that bloodline anyway. That this is a mongrelized group that were proselytized into Judaism, which is not a race but a religion, and they came out of that area of Eastern Europe and Western Asia, and in fact, they are an Asiatic group. That conspiracy's there, but at the same time, I don't want to throw everybody, just because they've been a Mason at some point, into that. Now, if you want to talk about Alexander Hamilton, there was somebody who was deep into the esoteric agenda of that group of people who are now, and I believe they are controlling the world and have been, but I think that they're on the edge and that they're falling apart, and I believe that people's awareness and people becoming awake, partially because of people like you being willing to stand up and have the courage to risk life and limb in order to bring this message forward that's going on, and the evil that's out there, and the evil that's controlling all of our institutional controls in our society, and what's destroying our republic. It's this very evil that's behind this. They're all about money. They're all about greed. They're all about their own power, and they want to be worshipped like gods, and they're willing to do anything anything at all, including getting rid of 80% of our population if they have to, in order to accomplish that goal. So I'm on my circle.
I agree with you. You know, I totally. It's the stuff that I had. In the very end of Rabbit Hole, in the appendix, I do talk about the dogma and the mythology and this the beliefs that I was raised with as a Satanist, and talk about the kind of twisted versions of what they have and what they believe in. And so you might find that interesting. I talk a lot about the whole aspect of gnosis and having it affected with the dark feminine. And that a lot of this was obtained from Jewish mythology and Gnostics. And so they aren't particularly Jewish. I mean, they go under that guise, and that's the reason why I wanted to say I'm not anti-Semitic. As a kid, we knew that it was heavily involved in Jewish Judaism. Perfect example, Marcia Bear was a devout Jew. And obviously the Bears were heavily involved with the Franklin Credit Union. And she was just one of many. And our family has a huge, we had a lot of Jewish friends because we had a Jewish heritage that my grandmother Schroeder turned away from because it was not socially acceptable at the time. And so our family stopped practicing Judaism, even though we were, in fact, Jews. And so it has been the lineage of this whole satanic stuff. Because I don't want to say that all Freemasons are bad. It's just like with the cults. Let me explain it this way. You could be invited to a party, but not be invited to what goes on afterwards. You could be invited to the party and invited to what goes on afterwards, but you wouldn't be invited to another happening over here. You might be invited to all three of those, but not be invited to Hall Park. And very few people were invited up from the stairs to the pavilion, which is where my family was and my father, where we were sacrificing children. And so it all went in stages. You worked your way up. That's how gangs work. It's no different than how gangs work on the street. And it was all about drugs and money. As I get older and I learn more, I realize that it was about drugs and money, but it was also about the religious aspects. They really do believe that what they did worked, and I believe what they were doing works, even though I don't believe it works anymore. And so that's the reason why we're seeing everything come out in the open. I just talked to a survivor in Hawaii today, and she was telling me that the energy that she feels, and she just feels that God is everywhere right now. And I told her that's the way everyone is starting to feel. You know, without, as much as they want to squelch everything and cut the people down and limit our knowledge and limit our, raise the gas prices so that it limits transportation, they can't kill the hope and they can't kill the internet. As much as they want to try, even though I really want to say that the new version of SOPA is really dangerous and people need to get off their butts and start to argue it. And that's my little soapbox for today.
Well, you had mentioned the possibility of your sister joining you tonight. Is she around or not?
No. She is having car problems and financial problems. And she was actually going to come with me to go to Colorado, but she is very overwhelmed by all of this right now. She was the
she was the person who actually came out and said, started talking about everything. She was the trailblazer in our family. And I owe her a great deal for being a trailblazer. But in her age and the fact that she's gone through a divorce and she has ill health, she is not the trailblazer that she once was, you know, 20 years ago. And so it's just been, she wants to take it easy. She would have been here tonight, but she's also taking care of my niece's children, her grandkids. And so that takes precedence over you guys. Sorry.
You talked about this earlier in the week, obviously, and I was curious with her being, you know, I hate to announce the fact that she's 12 years older than you, but you already let that cat out of the bag. But I was wondering what it was like for her, especially to have to watch a young brother go through what you guys went through, and what she risked to try to protect you if she, in fact, did that.
Oh, she did. She tried to protect me, but my dad was incredibly violent and incredibly abusive, and we were all frightened of him until he got older. I got less and less frightened because I got bigger than him. But they obviously got my dad at a much younger age. And she was taken out of the house when she was 12. And so I was left there. I laugh at everyone because they say the family dynamics of where you're at. I fall into the only child, the oldest child, and the youngest child because I was the only child for so many years. She went to foster care. And then when she got out of foster care and she went to college, she got into an abusive relationship with a man that we believe is also a serial killer as well. And so he just joined my family, and she did everything she could to escape. In fact, she spent a year and a half in a shelter homeless because the family wouldn't help her, and she was trying to get away from an abusive relationship. And so my sister has been caught up. I don't know if it's the age or if it was the experiences. I know that my older brother and my older sister, who are more my older sister's age, were very mean to my sister. And so she had it really hard. And my oldest siblings, the oldest three siblings, other than my brother who only made it 24 hours, our past destroyed all of them. And my sister is in many ways trying to recover, and we argue about her recovery because she wants to just ignore it all, and I basically am under the belief that you can't ignore it because it comes out horrible ways, other ways. And so we're just kind of at a, you know, loss. She's trying to make it through her health problems and all of that. But she protected me a lot. She was the one who got involved. After I attacked her son, I write about this in my book, I actually attacked her son because I was having a nervous breakdown. And all the people came in and wanted to know why I was near a psychotic break, because I was telling everybody that I was the Antichrist and I needed to die. Because I was the Antichrist, and it was her involvement in the court systems that got social services into my dad's house in Greenwich and got people starting to look at us. And it was basically a saving grace in my life. I don't know if I said this last time, but lighting the guy on fire was the thing that saved my life. And then having to run to Grettinger and a kid, I thought it was the most terrible experience I'd ever experienced. But as an adult, I realized it saved me. You know, I was protected in a way that I wouldn't have been in a big city. Small town living was great. And I wouldn't do it again as an adult, trust me. But it was great as a kid. It really did save me. And my sister was fundamental in that. Both my both my sisters, actually. Now, my oldest sister, Cindy, saved my butt more than once with my family, too. So, I was very blessed. I was the youngest, and everybody loved me. And then I was gay, and so my dad never accepted me, so I never had to vie for my dad's affections because I could never get him anyway. And so I think I was more safe than my sisters.
Well, I'm wondering, you haven't talked anything about handlers. You know, even Obama's got his handler with Valerie Jarrett up there, the Iranian-born gal that was Michelle's boss and introduced them, I believe. And my point is that I'm wondering if you have anything to share about how handlers work and how they play into the conditioning process of the mind control.
Oh, big time. Well, my first handler when I was a kid, like I had told you last time, was Michael Aquino. It went from, in Omaha, the handler situation went from that to Alan Bear. Handlers are meant to help program the people, help teach the people. He was my master for a long time. I didn't necessarily call him a handler as much as, you know, he was my master. He was the one who taught me a lot. And so, but looking back at the dialogue that's going on, they just call them handlers. Handlers are the ones who abuse you the worst and love you the most. Or at least that's what you're led to believe when you're growing up in the whole situation. It was best not to piss off Aquino because he could be vicious. And he was vindictive and he was quick. And so I got out of that as a kid. Like I said, my father got us out after he made me light the guy on fire when I was 10. It broke my conditioning. And so I was released basically from all of the stuff. And we went and isolated ourselves in a count of 900 people in northern Iowa. But then when I got back to Omaha when I was 19, Aquino obviously was not here, but Alan Bear was the one who took over. And Alan Bear manipulated, it was through his experience. Alan Bear was married to Marcia Brandeis. Brandeis was a huge marketing, a huge department store in town, and super well-known, very wealthy people. They owned the Marcia and Alan and Marcia Bear Foundation, and it funded almost all of the arts at one point in time in Omaha, Nebraska, as well as owning the hockey team, the Lancers, and numerous other businesses in town. And so Alan Bear just manipulated the crap out of me with my friends. The interesting thing about the whole cult stuff is that I did not realize that the people were involved with my past and reporting to Alan Bear about me until well into my 30s. That's how sneaky they were. I really did believe these people that I had in my life were my best friends. And they were just reporting back to Alan Bear, who kept track of everything that I was doing. In the very end, the only reason why Alan Bear went away from us was because he went to go offer my other half a job. My other half was working at a company, and he was unhappy with his position. And Alan offered him a job. And we argued about it the whole weekend before. He was supposed to meet Michael, or he was supposed to meet Alan at on Monday. And Michael and I fought the whole weekend because I wanted nothing to do with it. I wanted to hear none of it. He was going to say no to Alan there and walk away because of my past experiences that I read about in the book, had absolutely no trust for Alan Bear and realized that he was one of the most dangerous men that I've ever met. And the only reason why he left is not this long is because Michael excused himself to go to the bathroom because we had been drinking a lot of tea that afternoon. And I told Alan Bear that I felt sorry for him. And he automatically got irritated, and his ego couldn't handle that, and he asked me why. And I basically explained to him that if he had been a grocery clerk in a store, nobody would have looked twice at him. And so I expressed how lonely it must be for him, that he never would know if people loved him or what he could do for them. And that must be a very lonely place to be. And that was the only reason he left us alone. He died of cancer 8 months later. The handlers, and this is, as far as kids go, you know, the whole thing about it is that they're the ones that you want to please. The handlers are one you want to please. I mentioned a book before just on this broadcast, or maybe it was Doug's, A Crime So Monstrous by Benjamin Skinner. It talks about the mindset that goes through, and it just talks about human slavery, and it doesn't have anything to do with the MKUltra programming. But the keynote, with everything that he taught me, I know how to work with energy. I understand energy in ways. I think in pictures. I get images of people's thoughts. It's, you know, he's very good at training. He's just not able to do the things himself because he's never gone through the training. And so handlers are, in my experience, handlers are intelligent. They are ruthless. They are violent. But they are small. And for other survivors that are out there, I would tell you to start rethinking your handler's position, because I was taught as a kid that I was alone. They were all that there was, and there was nothing else. And when you live in such despair, it's easy to go to the dark side, which is exactly what they want you to do. And I have always been blessed because God has never left me. And whenever things got the darkest was when I sought the light out the hardest. And so it, in a lot of ways, what they taught backfired, because I learned how to work with the light as well as the dark. But handlers, J.C. DeGaard, I think someone brought up J.C. DeGaard before, and J.C. DeGaard is a perfect example of how you can keep someone locked up, impregnate them, have them have kids, use them for child pornography, and have them chained outside in a tent in your backyard, and have them there for 18 years. You know, it's predators. The biggest thing that Aquino taught me, and the hardest thing for me in all of this, is that Aquino taught me how to be a predator. I'm not a predator, but I have that mindset, and I hate it. Of all the things that trigger me the most, that mindset is the worst as an adult. What you end up doing for your handlers is wanting to emulate them. And I think that's what the whole device is set up, is that you have some sort of Stockholm effect where you know, a lot of people who are, I never wanted to, you know, I was one of the lucky ones. Some of the people who don't escape, that's what ends up happening, is that you want to emulate your handlers and be involved with, you know, and at the end, you just want to get back. They make you so angry, it's so humiliating and so degrading, and all of everything that you go through is just so, you know, forcing you to eat feces and crapping on you and screwing you and making you screw animals, and, you know, the whole thing about it is that it's so overwhelmingly disgusting and shaming. The victims themselves forget themselves in the process, because you're so shamed that you don't want to deal with it. And shame is one of the biggest handler's tools other than isolation. I don't know if I'm rambling or answering your question. So
you're answering the question extremely well, David. And I just want to say to you that I get the sense from you that you're no longer a predator for a number of reasons. And I'd like to just want to make sure I'm not okay. You made the comment about being a predator. Well, you talked about Satan worshipers or those that are Satanists, and to me, this is a key element for people to understand. Pardon me for getting on a soapbox for just a minute, but I think I need to slow down and get this out. Kierkegaard defined the difference between art and what's the word for not prostitution, but the pornography. The difference between art and pornography was that art, you look at something and you enjoy the experience of seeing it. Where pornography, you look at it and you want to take it home, in that you want to consume it. You want to take it for your own. That to me is the essential of being a predator. And if we think about what is good in this world, you know, Christ said that only the Father is good. And I asked the Spirit, I asked, what does that mean? And I was given that answer directly. And the direct answer was, that which will sustain you eternally. That's what's good. Well, if something is consuming, if it's a predator, it is out to prevent things from being sustained. It is the essence of evil. And that's where the difference is between the good and the evil. Okay? Is that elemental?
I understand. The problem that I have, let me give you the situation, because this is it's an excellent situation to go on. We were in San Antonio, and we decided to go to a water park, not having any clue what we were going to expect. And hold on for just 2 seconds. I'm getting a phone call, and I want to turn it off. Hold on. Okay, sorry about that. Sorry about the interruption.
Not at all.
And so we went to Schlitterbahn for the water park. Well, there was a new one and an old one, and these were about 15 minutes away, and they had buses that carried you back and forth to both of the camps. So Michael and I had gotten on to the bus and immediately recognized a 9-year-old boy who was alone, who was depressed, who was all by himself, who was having no fun because he had either no friends or he didn't have any friends at the park. And he was so depressed. And I turned to Michael and told Michael, that boy is what my dad would have chosen immediately. And it was just saying that out loud that it triggered me, and I ended up being triggered for the next day and a half. It's not that I'm worried that I'm a predator. It's just that I understand how predators work, especially growing up with my father. And I understand how they think. And it frustrates me that people do not keep better track of their children, because they just don't understand how evil this world can really be and how quickly and how fast it can happen. And there's nothing you can do about it. And that's the reason why I want to bring awareness to all of this, is because there's, I have started to channel, because through therapy, what I end up doing is what I was taught to do is look into people's faces and see what they were hiding and see what hurt them. And I was encouraged to manipulate and abuse that. And as an adult, I have a choice. We all have choices. And my choice is to do what God wants me to do. And so when I see someone who's hiding something or in pain, which is generally what it is it causes them discomfort. My whole thing now is to try and heal the person or bring them strength instead of satisfying any kind of narcissistic, egocentric desire that I might have out of the whole situation. And I found that in giving myself that way, God and the whole entire universe has blessed me with abundance. And so I am living proof that what Jesus Christ taught works. And that's the biggest thing is, and it's not saying, oh, I'm Jesus Christ or anything. I'm just saying that what he said works. Helping your neighbor, reaching out, giving, you know yourself, control yourself, and give freely of your time and energy. And that's really the big thing is, you know, knowing yourself and controlling yourself and reaching out and helping your fellow man and realizing that we are not separate and we're not as far apart as everyone seems to think we are. In fact, all of us think a lot more alike than what we, you know. We all have grown up in America to be taught we're individual and we're also separate and also special, when really the truth is a lot of us are very much alike. And instead of having that be detrimental, I think that's actually something to look at that's kind of positive myself. It makes me feel good to know that, you know, people are actually generally good. If you give them a chance, people are good. You know, yes, there are some buttheads, and they, you know, one bad apple spoils the bunch, as they say. But for the most part, if you give people the chance, they're good. And survivors, with my book, I'm trying to get it to the point where people will come out and start listening to survivors, and we can get exposure on this. Because I think if you crack something hard enough, all of it will break. And it's the system that needs to break. It's, we can vote whoever idiot they want to give us in the office, but every idiot that they give us is exactly that, what they give us. There's no real choice, and it's, you know, we really do need leaders, and there are leaders out there, it's just that nobody knows who they are because they're not, the media has everyone so entranced with the Kardashians and reality television and all of that garbage that they play. Sorry, I'm getting on another. I hate television. I never have it on when I'm home. So, and I hate cop shows because they're completely not factual. And as Doug was saying, all of this stuff with Omaha is interconnected. That's why I'm so excited about going out to Colorado, because I'll be able to talk with John DeCamp and Doug Millar and all the people that Doug wants me to deal with and talk with and share stories with. I'm going to learn a lot about Colorado and what was going on in Columbine. And the nice thing about it is that I'm not a lawyer. I'm just some nobody who's on disability who has a big mouth and a really good pen. And when I find out about the stuff in Columbine, I'm going to probably trot my butt right on home and blog about it on my blog, because I believe that it's the system and it's all interconnected. And the satanic stuff in Colorado, from what I understand, is really heavily, from Colorado to California, it's just inundated. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Sorry, I do have more questions. I ramble, so you just have to interrupt me when I start going. I don't mind it at all, so feel free to interrupt me at any point in time.
We've got about 25 minutes left, and I've been dominating this conversation as far as the questions, and I'd like to open it up to Red and perhaps Dwayne and Dr. Kate. And if Doug's still there, Doug, did you call back in, or are you still on with us? I believe Doug may be called back in, and he may be muted. So, Dr. Kate, that 707 is probably Doug. So give it a live mic and see if that's Doug on 707. Doug, you have a live mic if you're there. Well, at any rate.
Hey, Doug. Okay. Nope.
Let's get Red. Red, you've been listening to this. I think you've got a little idea of what David's been through and what he's trying to accomplish. I'm wondering if you have any questions or comments to make.
Well, I'll tell you a great deal of this. I'm having trouble hearing the whole thing, especially the first hour or so. I was having difficulty trying to put it all together. But what I think we see here is the total lack of information, education, and whatever that is that should be available to everybody, especially people that go to evangelical Christian churches and such. The bulk of the people out there really have no comprehension of really all of what I think it's important that we understand a few very basic things about our creation, about God and His plan, and the fact that there is a false God. And you won't find too many people out there that understand that if God has His chosen people, and of course the Bible is quite clear that the children of Israel were God's chosen, and He had definite plans for those that group of people, that race. Jacob, of course, was the first Israelite. And these were God's chosen people. And what we have not been taught, and we have not had it really become a part of our belief system, is that Satan is a false god. He's a small g god. And of course, is a counterfeiter. He counterfeits everything that the true God, the capital G God, does. And so if God, the capital G God, if He has His chosen, I can assure you that Lucifer or Satan is going to have his chosen people, the counterfeits. And so, you see, when people get into a worship of Lucifer, there is no limit. There is no limit on those people as long as they are doing things that are destructive. If you are one of God's children, you're going to be, Adam, of course, was created in the likeness of God, and the children of Israel were to be in the likeness of God, and God was very creative, and so we, the people, were to be creative. But if you have people that worship the false god, they're not going to be creative. They're going to be destructive. And so when you have these perversions out here, God has created mankind, His chosen. He wants them to be creative in more ways than one, of course. We were to replenish the earth with more people, and we've accomplished that apparently quite well. However, the satanic counterfeit, you see, is destructive of that which God had for his children. And so we really don't have much in the way of education and, you know, giving people these basic principles. And, of course, you have to recognize that when Christ was in the wilderness for 40 days, and then at the end of that time, Satan took him up on a high mountain and showed him the kingdoms of the earth. And, of course, the kingdoms of the earth represent the wealth and the power of the earth. And Lucifer announced, Satan announced to Christ that these were presented to him. He was given the wealth and power and kingdoms of the earth and in a previous creation. And, of course, we need to understand that God has a plan to redeem the planet from that curse of the failure of Lucifer to remain true to his creator. Lucifer was created as a very powerful angel, and he was given the power of choice, and he made the wrong choices. And so every one of us out here, the creatures called mankind on planet Earth, we all have choices. And the small g god, he's going to make some choices available to you. He made choices available to Christ. Christ could bow down and serve Lucifer. And God, or Lucifer, the small g god, would have given him the power, the kingdoms, the wealth of the planet. And I guess I'm kind of rambling here, but I think that we've been shortchanged in our education system, especially in the churches. That's one of the major problems with government schools. If the churches were still taking a bigger interest, more of an interest in the education of the children, education of the whole population, it would sure make a difference. But the way it is, Satan, the Luciferians, they have a lot of freedom to do what they want to do, and at this day and age where we're at right now, the people, Satan's chosen people, are very, very powerful, very strong, very rich, and there's a lot of people that have accepted that offer, that the same offer that Satan offered to Christ. He offers it to people to this day. And so we need to understand that if we're going to really get a grasp on what we're hearing about tonight. Of course, I heard John DeCamp speak many years ago, and I don't remember exactly just when, but it came as a total surprise to me. And as having grown up in church, with my father being a country preacher, I was never taught this. I had no access to this information, and so I think that the Christian community out here needs to become active in this. They need to get a better handle on it, so that they can help people get a handle on this thing. We have people that get so trapped in this pornography thing, and it's inherently evil, and we need to recognize the source and where it comes from. So that's all I want to say at this point, but let's get back to some of the basics for people so that they can you know, identify things that are happening around them as to whether it's a satanic force behind it or whether it is a force for good. And of course, we heard some of that here as we in the last hour. And I enjoyed this very much.
Thank you, Red. We've got some callers. David, you want to make a quick comment to that, or can I open the phone line and let somebody ask a question?
Oh, go ahead and open the phone lines.
Area code 402, you have an open mic.
Area code 402. Oh, shoot. That's me, isn't it? John DeCamp.
Hi, John. John, did you have a comment or question?
No, thought I was supposed to be on the program, but maybe I didn't.
Well, we're glad you rejoined us. 707, Doug, is that you? You have an open mic as well. Well, David, let's just get back to where Red was talking about it. I got a feeling Dwayne might want to jump in with a question as well. But David, I think Red's on the right track here. I mean, there's so many people that when they hear this stuff, they're shocked because they haven't been taught any of it.
Yeah, this is John DeCamp again. Hey, when I first started hearing this, I was a young senator, and I was by then a 16-year veteran senator. But anyway, I was one of the first ones who said if I really believed any of this, I would be the first to step forward, launch every investigation and resource possible to find out, so on and so forth. And then I got this letter from this kid named Paul Benassi, and he said, if you come see me, I could show you documents I wrote. And he was in jail at the time and was asking help. And he said, I could tell you where these diaries I wrote while I was a kid growing up. My father told me or taught me, my grandfather did, he said, to write a diary about everything. So I kept diaries of everything, and they're buried in this window well of this house. And he gave me the address. So I took his letter, and I thought, oh, well, what the heck. And I drove to Omaha where his house was and dug in the window well. The house was abandoned, and the family had lost it, but the window well was still there, and sure enough, there was this stack of diaries this kid had written since he was just young kid, and his name was Paul Benassi, and as I say, that started my official investigation and the whole Franklin investigation I did, and the case that went on and on and got crazier and crazier, and I couldn't believe this stuff, but one after another, it proved to be true, the horrors, the frightening things, the satanic cult, so on and so forth, and it's far more vested than most people want to believe, dream, or even imagine. Anyway, I'll shut up for a while and let somebody else talk.
Well, thanks for calling back in, John. David? Comment?
I'm here. You know, I agree with John in that it is so much more prevalent than what you think. Like I said before, Michigan has a problem with it. Atlanta has a problem with it. Omaha has a problem with it. Colorado's had a problem with it. Up and down California, Portland, Oregon. Hawaii, I just talked to a survivor in Hawaii who grew up in Hawaii, and it's prevalent there as well. And it's the same kind of lack of investigation that surrounds all of these. And so it shows that there's a systematic push to keep all of this quiet. Not to mention the False Memory Foundation, which, you know, in my book, I basically point out that the False Memories Foundation, my sister did her thesis for her master's on repressed memory. And what she detailed was that
one of the members of the first False Memory Foundation Society Board, who's also a member of NAMLA, which is the North American NAMLA Love Association. And so there were a lot of connections to things that they shouldn't have been connected with and were getting funding from NAMLA. And my whole question with the False Memory Foundation is, if all of these allegations are false and they've all been deemed a hoax, which a lot of people have believed that they are, why is it necessary to have the False Memory Foundation at all? But a perfect example of a False Memory Foundation leader is Debbie Nathan, who works for, let's see, I think it's the American Justice Board, or Justice for Americans, or something. I'd have to look up the name of it. Debbie Nathan wrote Civil Exposed. And Civil Exposed, she works to basically get financing for accused people of pedophilia to get them out of court. So she's basically a False Memory Foundation advocate who just wrote Civil Exposed. The interesting part about Civil Exposed is her last two chapters, Contagion and Containment, where she suggests that Sybil is the one who caused our nation's satanic panic, which is impossible, since Sybil never once said she was satanically ritually abused. And so it is my personal belief that people like Debbie Nathan, who have written a book on DID and Sybil, are trying to associate DID with satanic ritual abuse and dismiss it all in one fell swoop, which is what they did in the 80s and 90s. But the way to counteract that is to get survivors to come forward. And I seem to have a natural talent to get people to trust me and come forward and start talking. And a lot of the survivors that I've talked to are thinking about writing their own books. And so I think that we're going to see an upsurge in...
Cut off. Nothing here. Did you hear anything? Nothing there.
Hello?
Dropped and hopefully we're back up.
Okay. I can hear you. I can hear you too.
Dwayne, you can hear me?
Yes.
Well, good. That means we're still on.
you dropped for about 20 seconds. You're up. Yeah.
Yeah, I realized it and dialed it right back in, so we're good to go. And Doug Millar, I believe you're on live with 707, right?
Oh, yes. Right, Terry. I was off for a while talking to Johnny Camp because he had a crisis. John, do you want to just mention what's happening and why you had to leave the show for 45 minutes or so?
Or not.
Maybe not. Johnny Camp, are you there?
He dropped. His line dropped
again. Okay, yeah. Right.
We've got about 5 minutes left, and I just want to afford you the opportunity to, you know, to plug your book or your websites or anything else that you would like to cover within the next few minutes that we haven't covered. I wanted you to be able to do that.
Okay, awesome. You can always check out my website. It's davidschurter.com. Schurter is S-H-U-R, T as in Tom, E-R-R.com.
there's some incredibly interesting development happening in Michigan with Oakland's child killings that I have been posting, so that's kind of interesting on there. RabbitHoleBook.com, if you want to check out the book and all the insides of it, that's the website for that. And if you're looking for any kind of organization to get involved with or just to be on their the Yahoo chat group, that would be the NATRC Coalition. It's NATRC, and then take the C and spell coalition.org. And that's about it. Did you guys have any more questions?
Well, Doug, Dwayne, do you have a question?
Well, yeah, but I don't know that we'd have time for it. I just want to know real quick, David, have any of the organized churches been involved in some of this, do you know? Have you seen people coming in from that you're sure were from the churches?
Oh, yes. Boys Town was heavily involved in this. In fact, in the 70s and 80s, early 80s, they were taking busloads of Boys Town boys and dropping them off at the old market. That was one of the outings for the Boys Town boys. And the old market was a hunting ground for all of the pedophiles. And so the organized religions, there's definitely the organized religions, the first and foremost Boys Town itself. And so, yeah, there's a lot of proof of that. Nick Bryant, in his book, The Franklin Scandal, also talks about that as well. Is that, you know, kind of skirts around it. I believe that John DeCamp does specifically speak about Boys Town. And I know the Conspiracy of Silence, the video that John DeCamp got that was all about the Franklin scandal, that definitely talks about Boys Town.
That's precisely where I was actually heading you, actually, Dave. So, Conspiracy of Silence, a great flick for those who haven't seen it. A lot of stuff in the background on it. Doug, one's on your way, actually. But have you also at the same time, Dave, have you also at the same time felt any help from any of those churches to try and help kids like you who are in that position?
No.
Or do you feel it was actually one-sided, one-way street all the time?
It's not a one-way street, but you have to understand that as a survivor in all of this, it's hard to know who to trust. And going to the churches and not knowing who's involved, and in Omaha, Nebraska, as it is now, it is scoffed at. People who talk about cult activity and being involved with cults, they are scoffed at and looked at as crazy. And that's even with the churches. And in Omaha, Nebraska, especially in Omaha, Nebraska, I have not been good to be able to go to the churches because of my lifestyle. I don't know if you guys know, but I am homosexual, and I have been in a relationship for 19 years. And so that also limits where I can go as far as the churches are concerned. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Sure.
We have about a minute left. Anyone else have a question?
Well, yes. Terry, thanks, Father. This is Doug, and I just want to mention that, you know, Christ didn't just go around and talk to his disciples and his supporters. He reached out to the people who didn't know him, didn't know God, and I think he gets that example for us. We need to reach out to people like David here, who has been through more than any of us can even relate to, and we need to show him Christ's love so he will want to accept Christ in the future.
No question about that.
Thank you, Doug. Yeah, thank you.
Dave, I'm working on it, guys. Yeah, and Dave, I made an offer through Doug to talk to you after the show at any time at your convenience. I'd be happy to work with you.
Thank you.
And Dwayne is a pastor.
And I look, if I can see you guys if you guys are in Denver, I'll be in with Doug. I'm basically at Doug's disposal all next week. And so
I'll be gone on Tuesday night until Thursday morning, but on the Thursday I'll be back in town and love to get with you guys Thursday, Friday if you're going to be around.
Yes, I'm not leaving until Sunday morning.
Awesome.
Well,
we're out of time.
Okay,
yes.
Well, I just want to mention that we're going to be at Country Buffet in Colorado Springs Monday night at 6 p.m. with David.
Let's talk off the air.
Okay, buddy.
See you next week, everyone. And thank you. This has been Walls in Our Minds. And David, really appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Awesome. Good night.